Private Journal of Gregorius Bass, the 29th of the second month. I had not previously walked upon the high paths, for their use is reserved to the Bonvidaun nobility. I was not about to let this custom stop me, however, in pursuit of someone who had murdered 5 people, if not 6 by now, for Corius's theory was that he would kill on the night just gone. Nor did my misliking for heights hinder me. My blood was up, and my sword out, and I would have this butcher or die in the attempt. The fleeing figure seemed that of a small man, and I feared at first that I would be outdistanced too quickly, and that the fugitive would elude me by his greater agility and rapidity of progress, and a better knowledge of the ways, with which he was evidently familiar. I soon noted, however, some spots of blood upon the paths, and dared to hope that my second bolt had struck him and might slow his flight. This proved to be the case, for when I reached the edge of the next roof where I had seen him vanish and looked about, he was still visible, and limping noticeably where before he had been whole. This surprised me somewhat, for owing to my eyesight I have never been accurate with a bow. Though I remembered my father telling me, a crossbow is not a gentleman's weapon, for it requires but little skill. Clearly I had hit him but a glancing blow, however. The roofing slates of Bonvidaun are grey, dark grey when they are damp, and the slowly lightening sky was grey also with overcast. Between the two, the black figure fled. After taking a moment to determine of the several branches of the paths which I needed to follow in order to come up with the butcher, I pounded forward at my best pace, my footsteps ringing loudly upon the wooden slats with which the paths are floored. They differ in construction, some well-travelled ways even possessing tiled coverings and handrails, while in other places they are no more than single planks. If one is fortunate, these have slats nailed across them to assist the grip of one's boots, but often enough they are smooth and treacherous to a hurrying man. The part of the paths I traversed was medium in this regard, not covered or railed, but several planks in width, and at points where they descended formed into proper steps. After the rainy night they were damp, and I slipped once, and barely prevented myself from a fall off the paths onto the slope of the roof. Soon enough in my pursuit, however, the butcher led me on to narrower and more precipitous ways, where my greater speed of movement was nullified by the treacherous footing, and I ceased to gain ground, though I took care, at some risk to myself, not to lose any either. I wished I had contrived somehow to bring the crossbow, for even a shooter such as I could have hit him at such a distance. But I had not, and there was no helping it. I wasted neither time nor breath in crying out for him to halt. It was a pursuit to the finish, and we both knew it. He, however, was hindered in that he had to keep a watch behind him, while all my focus was before. And, looking back while making his way along a roof-crest, he stumbled on his injured side and fell, barely arresting himself from rolling down the slope of the roof. Rain is less frequent in Bonvidaun than in Calaria, and snow is unknown, and the slope of the roofs is correspondingly less. Still, it is enough to cause the heart to thud thinking of sliding down one, and I forbore to put on more speed, lest I also should fall. I made the best, however, of my opportunity to close the gap further. Before long, too, the area of narrow ways ended, and he was forced to cross a more popular and hence safer route, where I again gained. I had found a second wind by now, and when we reached a straight stretch, 4 planks in width, and in the valley between 2 roofs, I put on a spurt which carried me almost within reach of him. Hearing my footfalls pressing him so close, he did not dare look back, but vaulted a rail at the edge of a roof and dropped suddenly to a lower level, hoping, I imagined, that so clumsy a man as I would not dare follow. I heard him cry out as he hit, the injury to his leg no doubt paining him, and this encouraged me to quickly imitate his drop. For fear, I think, that if I paused I would not have the courage to make the leap, I had not sheathed my sword, despite the danger of only having one hand free to catch me, if I should slip. I was immediately glad of this decision, for the butcher had also drawn a sword, and cut at me even as I fell. We were confronted on another unrailed plank bridge between houses, which crossed an alley far below, one of the back streets. It ran from a narrow ledge projecting partway down a higher building to the roofridge of a lower one, and a ladder joined it to the higher roof from which we had just descended. I blessed Falkior mentally for his blade-work before footwork approach, as I planted my soles as if taking root, and defended solidly against the butcher's backswing. I think he was not expecting me to have much skill, for his first attacks were loose. He soon found, however, that Falkior had drilled me in a solid defence, and his blade-work and his concentration tightened as he sought a way to penetrate it. His injury was to his right leg, with which he led, so his stance was solidly supported on his sound left, but he could not strike forward with full power. We fenced, in silence, except for the clang of our weapons and our heavy breathing, his somewhat faster and shallower than mine, which gave me hope of wearing him down. Seeing that he could not break my defence, however, and being at a disadvantage in position, for my back was to a wall as his was not, he began to move backwards along the narrow bridge, drawing me away from the wall. He had noted, I think, the brief horror of my downward glance. My response was to take two short steps and press my attack, turning his manoeuvre back against him. Again, I think this surprised him, and he flailed for a couple of strokes, barely defending himself. I let the opportunity go by, however, my lack of quickness allowing him to recover. He was more on his guard now, for he knew he faced an equal, and he probed and tested my defence, but I had learned to keep out Tamas, whose swordsmanship had surpassed that of most of his contemporaries, and I held. I observed the marks of the wasps which had assailed him. He had been stung on the cheek and on the hands, and his flesh was distorted, red and puffy with reaction to the venom of the insects. He must be in some pain, I thought. Sweat was starting on his forehead despite the chill of the morning, and I knew that if I could endure without making mistakes, I had won, for he was not my better, and I was uninjured. He must have known this too, for he spoke, I think, in an attempt to distract me. "Bass," he said, and his voice was lighter than I had anticipated, "what am I to you?" I did not answer, though I had a flicker of surprise that he knew my name. Most likely, I thought, he was one of the courtiers I had met all at once when I was presented to the king, so he remembers my name, though I do not know his. "Bass," he said again, "is it because I killed your countryman? It was not for his nationality, for I did not know it." Still, I did not answer. "He was only a practice piece," continued the murderer, "not like the others. He meant nothing in particular. Bass," he said, "what is your price for him?" I kept silent and concentrated on my fencing. "Surely," he said, "it is not because of the others. You can hardly have discovered last night's yet." So he had killed last night. I fought on with renewed concentration, knowing that I was avenging six poor souls. "The watchman was only to throw the watcher's investigation into disarray," he continued. "He was nobody." The man had had a wife, a son, a brother. He had friends, comrades, who mourned him. I set my teeth and fought on. The nobleman was just a puppy, a plaything I had tired of, who knew enough to be a little dangerous. Oh, but it is so much more satisfying to dispose of them oneself. I will always do that now. He cut unexpectedly low, but I was concentrating on his blade, not his words, and parried successfully, almost turning it into a cut at his injured leg. He fought grimly, without speaking, until he felt he had regained parity, then talked on. The commissioner fellow, now that was political. He led opposition against one of my measures, feeble opposition, and it would not have succeeded, but still I took pleasure in ending it, and replacing it with someone who would see things my way. It is so important to have people who see things one's own way, do you not find? The voice had been lightening all this time, and I felt I could almost place it, but deliberately concentrated on the task at hand. Block the thrusts, parry, riposte, keep the stance firm, do not let her force you off the edge. I almost did, as the realization hit me that I was fighting a woman. For a moment I faltered, and she almost had me, but I beat her blade aside and tried to trap it on her weaker right side. She freed it and stepped back.
"Do you know me, Bass? Do you know me now?" she said.
And I did. It was the Countess, after all. I still said nothing, for it seemed to encourage her to talk, to confess, and I thought it distracted her more than it did me. Certainly more than it would distract me to try to talk and fight at the same time. But now that I knew her, she must kill me. Not merely escape. I locked my gaze on her, seeking to predict the next movement of her blade, and defended doggedly, while looking for a chance to disarm her.
"So now you are wondering why I killed Mende, my faithful servant, wounded in an attack, intended to kill me. My confidant, the companion of my youth, I am hinting to you, Bass. Why do you think I killed her?"
Parry, bind, thrust. I almost had her that time. She was tiring. She was working up to a revelation, I realized, and also losing strength. Shortly, she would be desperate. I held my stance, parried her attacks, and watched for a mistake.
"Did you ever wonder, Bass, where Celia came from? How Mende ended up with a foster daughter? She is mine. Mine and Felkior's. And only Mende knew. And I killed Mende."
She struck hard, in punctuation of each panted phrase.
"Because she would have told, because she had found out, that I had had her son, Corius, killed."
She had at last succeeded in startling me, but my concentration was such that her desperate lunge failed, and I turned it into the opportunity I had been seeking. There was a confused flurry of limbs and weapons, and she went down with a thump at an angle on the narrow catwalk, ankles over one edge, shoulders over the other. There was a clattering sound as her sword hit the cobbles in the alley 3 stories below, and my blade was steady at her throat. "It is over, Countess," I told her. "It ends now." She bit her lip in frustration, casting down her eyes within the domino of the uncast.
"You have bested me, Bass," she said. "Well done. Few have done so in the City of Masks, and none who are living."
She clutched at her wounded leg through the skirts of her black cloak.
"I will have a limp like Mende, I think. Poor Mende. I am sorry now I killed her. "Will you help a lady up?"
she asked, extending her left hand, her right still clutching her leg. I had to lower my sword and direct it to the side in order to grasp her left hand with my left. She pulled her uninjured left leg back beneath her, then thrust hard with it, and there was another confused flurry. She came up fast inside the reach of my sword. I felt a sharp pain in my left side. Then there was another thump as I let her go in shock and spun around to protect myself, slipping on the wet wood, flinging her away from me, so that she struck the boards again, a glancing blow from which she rebounded, falling from the high bridge as I fell onto it. An iron hand clutched at my winded and wounded stomach. I didn't hear her scream or hit. I was vomiting in shock. I dropped my sword over the edge and almost passed out, clutching the board so hard that I drove splinters into my hands. I hung there across the flimsy bridge, feeling the blood seeping out of my side where her dagger point had penetrated through the heavy cloth of the cloak and the braided canvas and leather of Juliana's gift, and realized that without that gift I would undoubtedly be dead. Unexpectedly, a voice spoke above me, spoke my name. "Bass," it said, and it was Bardo's voice. "Bass, are you all right? Did she get you? I saw the dagger flash." "Winded," I gasped. "Stabbed. Just give me a minute." He hurried down the ladder to me and helped me to drag myself up onto the bridge. It was full light by this time, and I could see the Countess's body lying face up in the alley below. Bardo made me a pad for my wound out of stuff he evidently carried for such a purpose, doing so with an efficiency that bespoke practice, and had me put pressure on it. When I was sitting with my back against the wall, breathing heavily but in no further danger, he left me and descended to the alley. He did this by crossing the bridge, sliding down the roof to the left, to where it ended above a side street, and, so far as I could see, descending a ladder down the side of the building, which clearly he knew of, as it was not visible from where I sat. After several minutes he appeared at the head of some stairs leading to the alley from one of the middle streets on my right, having apparently walked around the building. He descended to the back way and checked the Countess's body. "Dead," he called up to me. I let out a breath I had not realized I was holding, and regretted it when it twinged my injury. Feeling unable to speak, I waved to indicate that I had heard. "Can you hold on there?" he asked. "It will take me just a minute to fetch help." I waved my assent, and he disappeared again up the stairs to the street. I have tired myself thinking of it all again. And though Juliana has not come to confiscate my quill, I think I will leave my narration for the night.
I'm Mike Reeves McMillan, and you've just been listening to me reading from my novel, City of Masks. For more information and to download more episodes, please visit city-of-masks.blogspot.com. Thanks very much.